Oh, I have so much to talk with Dr. James Kenton about with his work, Future Smart, and I'm sure you do too, so we'll take calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Dr. James Kenton with us, his book, The Future Smart, of course, Managing the Game-Changing Trends that Will Transform Your World. We'll get to your calls as well. James, I want to talk with you about something that we talk a lot about, and that's climate change. Regardless of the position of man-made or some kind of cyclical planetary issue, the question is true. The question is, are the climates changing, and they're changing dramatically? What are we going to do about that?
Well, I think it represents a tremendous opportunity for business. Clean tech, you're talking about an entirely new industry which hasn't really begun yet. So let's first deal with the facts. As a scientist, I will tell you, we know the climate is changing. We don't even have good climate models, but we know that things are happening abruptly. I mean, in California alone, the fire season used to be 3 months out of the year. It used to be over the summer. When I first came to California, I got to tell you now, it's 12 months out of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, the Gulf Coast has been battered by storms. We had tornadoes in Brooklyn, New York this past year. We had 5,000 people that died of the heat in France a couple of years ago. We're dealing with abrupt climate change. So let's just recognize the world is getting warmer. We are also dispersing a lot of water that will end up in places that we're not quite ready for it. In fact, most of the developing world megacities, most of the in Asia, Africa, even in Europe, most of the big cities, guess what? They're at risk for rising tides. And even the armed forces, the Navy had a study showing we could be looking at rising tides of maybe as high as even 10 feet over the next 30, 40 years. So let's put aside the fact that these abrupt climate changes are happening, whether it's the melting of Antarctica or the Arctic. I mean, the Arctic is now opening up. It's going to be a new geopolitical flash zone for, I forecast, future, you know, battles and concerns between conflicts between, you know, China, Russia, the United States. We haven't even gotten into that. So what do we do about it? I think it's a fantastic new opportunity for business to create ways to be able to, you know, protect cities, to be able to create new structures to prevent rising tides, but also variety of different kinds of businesses to deal with pollution, to deal with the ozone, to deal with storms, and to really think about retrofitting the planet, if you will, with new technologies. Again, we're not educating for this. These businesses haven't started yet. This is a multi-trillion dollar industry. Some people refer to it as geoengineering the planet.
Yeah, that's right.
About it. You know, hacking the planet to prevent extreme climate change. We have to be ready for much warmer environments, much wetter environments, and abrupt changes. And I think it represents a tremendous opportunity for small business and entrepreneurs to step into the fray and get us ready for this extreme future.
Won't we have wars over water in issues like that?
Yes, we will. In fact, if you one of the ways to analyze the conflict on the planet today is to look at nations and even continents that are already suffering from water stress. Okay? I mean, keep in mind, climate change is going to change. We've got about 1.5 billion people on the planet today that are hungry or nutritionally challenged. You know, food production, we waste about half the food we produce. When you add climate change to that and water stress, you're talking about failed states and issues related to governance that are going to be massively impacted by climate change. So, yes, we are talking about wars over not just water, but over, you know, territory. We could have territory that disappears. I was in Indonesia advising the government a couple years ago. You know, they've got over 100 islands, many of them that may disappear. The populations have to be relocated because of rising seas. So, again, this is going to be a big challenge. But again, I look at it as an opportunity for entrepreneurs. I look at it as an opportunity for innovations and being able to apply technologies. You know, we have to be predictive about these grand challenges facing our world, and we can't, you know, stick our head in the sand and make believe it's not going to be a problem. It's going to be a huge problem, but that means it could be a tremendous opportunity for creating a next generation of climate entrepreneurs that can help us save the planet.
Okay, now we go to the phones. Let's go to Tammy in San Diego, California, first-time caller. Hello, Tammy.
Hi, George. Geez, good evening.
Hi.
Good evening, James. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Well, thank you.
What an honor. I've been listening to Coast to Coast almost every night since I was 7. That was almost 30 years ago. So that being said, any controversial or unconventional ideas I generate, I attribute to you and your predecessor's influence.
We're the ones to blame.
Yep, exactly. So I'm calling tonight on the subject of stem cells. So obviously, being a woman, I've always questioned what was the purpose of our menstruation cycle. And one night I woke up at about 3:30 in the morning with a clarification. So the purpose of menstruation is that it's a professional source of stem cells, non-invasive, always present. And so I was wondering your guest thoughts on this. And considering the fact that I actually was able to get through on air after 30 years, it's pretty much confirmation that I'm onto something here. So I'll take your response off the air, and thanks for this opportunity.
All right, Tammy, thanks for calling in. Stem cells, I guess they're trying it from everywhere. The harvesting of personal stem cells without embryonic is a big thing now too, James.
Absolutely. In fact, that's the real breakthrough. You know, if you just think of adult stem cells being used, you know, being harvested and used, so and combining that with, as I said earlier, early diagnosis, being able to know that, you know, okay, we've got a potential problem here with an organ or a disease entity or some kind of genetic marker, you know, a SNP we call it, that could signal that you're going to have, you know, be susceptible to a disease such as diabetes or something even more serious like cancer. And then, of course, if we have that heads up, you know, that predictive forecast of your personal genomic profile, and matching that to now we can harvest your stem cells in a variety of ways from individuals. And then imagine all of us have our own, you know, harvesting capability where we're growing organs or even, you know, being able to adjust our genomics, even as adults, using stem cells to stave off that, prevent that illness, or to treat an illness. I think we're talking about really a reservoir of innovation that we're just beginning to scratch the surface of right now.
You talk about new launches from Google, IBM, Twitter, Amazon, Facebook. They're just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, aren't they?
I think they are. I think you're going to see a lot more what I call the halo companies that are the next Googles, the next Amazons, the next, you know, Twitters. I think, you know, the next, keep in mind when, you know, even when Facebook came out, you know, you're still, and Google had already been a mature business. Think about that, right?
That's right.
You have a number of businesses like Amazon that didn't make money for a long time, and they basically were, you have a lot of traditional businesses that were online businesses that we thought were very innovative, and the marketplace has opened up. Apple's been around a long time, yet you have new businesses that Snapchat and other ones that show up that, quite frankly, give us new opportunities. So, yes, I think we're going to see business formation that's born of this kind of global innovation economy that, quite frankly, is going to seem like an almost an endless spectrum of opportunities, of multi-billion-dollar companies that are going to give us greater value and produce new jobs and, quite frankly, amaze us. Look for virtual reality, big data analytics, telepresence, new mobile technologies, and things I've talked about earlier, you know, the whole ecosystem around about self-driving cars and eventually, you know, space technology. We're just at the beginning of this game.
Wasn't Google brilliant for going into Android and getting that going?
Absolutely. Android was one of the many brilliant things that Google did. People don't realize, you know, at the beginning, when Google first started out, Google didn't know what they were kind of doing. They they licensed this thing called a search engine. They weren't quite figuring out what was going on, but they made some very good acquisitions. And, of course, they acquired the portfolio of patents from Motorola. They've done very nicely, and their search business continues to grow, and it's transformed advertising on the planet today.
We go to Sherry in Southfield, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hi, Sherry. Good morning.
How are both of you?
You too.
Morning.
I have one question that I have for your guest.
All right.
And the rest are, I'm sorry, I have it backwards. I have two comments, one for your guest, one for you, George, and one question for you, George. Real fast, instead of aspirin, George, I heard that it really harms us, and instead the white willow bark is better, and instead of you taking it, because I heard you take it. And secondly, a long time ago you had a guest named Wayne Green, and I haven't heard him since, and I would love
it. That's a long time. I don't even know if he's alive anymore.
That's what I was hoping he is. I loved him so much. And also to your guest, Dr. Wallach says that nutrition makes our own stem cells, and we can reverse aging with minerals. He said we can live 200 and some years. They already proved it scientifically. And he said genetics is only played by only 5% of the equation, and that we don't need the drugs and the surgery. I didn't know if that's what you were thinking, but I kept my mother alive 5 years longer by giving her all the healthy organic food.
Good for you.
And even myself, I'm 67. And if I weren't under so much stress, I'd be doing better.
Well, I just had Dr. Breggin on talking about stress.
Right.
De-stress yourself, believe me.
Right.
All right, James, Doc Wallach is one of our regular monthly guests. As a matter of fact, he's on next week sometime. But he believes that the body can regenerate itself given the right supplementation. Are you still with us? No. We've lost him. He's gone, but we'll get him back. Donna, we'll get him back, and as soon as you get him back, put him on hold, all right? And we shall see. Let's go next to Annie in Alabama. Annie, welcome to the show.
I especially want to talk to Dr. James Ganton about this. This is a problem with a patent office. Can you get him back on the phone? I have hundreds of inventions, many being high-tech, and I really do want to get some feedback from him on this. Can you get him on the phone, please, George?
Annie, you're breaking up on us, so try to call back. But we've got him back. Are you back with us, James?
Yes, I am.
What happened? You disappeared.
Yeah, I know. It must have been some nefarious rogue who didn't want me to dispense with the truth. Who knows?
Yeah. Anyways, I was talking about Doc Wallach. He's one of our regular guests.
Yeah.
And he believes the body can regenerate itself if you take care of it with the right supplementation.
Well, I think that's true to a certain extent. I mean, look, if people were to really look at every single food they eat and really pay attention to, you know, kind of transforming the way we eat, how much we eat, and try to focus more on healthy food, I think it would make a big impact in our life. I'm not going to argue with somebody else's research that they get good results from. I haven't seen their research, but I do think though it's possible to be able to really transform your health for the long period. You know, societies that we've studied, some in Italy on islands, and of course in the Himalayas, and even in India, they live extraordinary lives, and they seem to have much smaller diets of food they eat, and they have a kind of more tranquil lifestyle. So it's really a holistic approach. It's not just your food and the purity of the food, but it's also kind of what you do with your life and what you give back maybe and what kind of quality of life you live. And I think it's somewhat individualized. We call it biochemical individuality, but also we find that cultures that tend to be not necessarily in the mainstream of cities tend to live longer and healthier.
We go to Jeff in Culver City, California. Hello, Jeffrey. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, George and Mr. James Canton. Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure thing, Jeff.
All of these new technologies are truly mind-boggling and baffling. Just in the last 17 years, Mr. Canton, all of these companies magically appear to come out of nowhere, and many of the people behind these companies are young and appear, you know, to be mostly white. you know, like the founders of Craigslist, Facebook, Amazon, mm-hmm. eBay, SpaceX, YouTube, Snapchat, and all that. Now, most of this stuff is just a whole bunch of gossip type, meaningless nothingness stuff, right? But for example, Elon Musk and his SpaceX, Tesla, Motor Corp, you know, and others like him who are actually materializing products and doing things beneficial to mankind and humanity. I just want to know this, Mr. Canton. Do you believe that there are more of these mysterious CEOs who apparently appeared out of nowhere and supposedly running billion-dollar companies and corporations? And what is your take on why are there virtually no minorities, meaning others who are not white or, you know, even Asian, creating companies like these successfully? I'll take the answer off the air.
That's an interesting question, James.
Yeah, well, you know, let me try to refute that and say, look, we've got, I travel around the world. I mean, one of the largest companies is Baidu, which is an Asian company. And then we've got Alibaba, which is run by Jack Ma.
It's like the Amazon out there, right?
That's right. In fact, you know, Alibaba is bigger than Amazon and Google and Apple all rolled together. I mean, so there actually are a lot of minorities who are not minorities. I mean, if you're in Asia, you know, there's just dozens of Chinese, Indonesian, Malaysian. So I've been all over Asia, and I can tell you that there's very few white people that are in the game in Asia, and they're creating a tremendous amount of wealth. Now, also, you know, if you go online, you'll find African entrepreneurs. The areas such as fintech are populated throughout Africa. If you look at Paesa, digital currency, the blockchain, Bitcoin, there's a lot of innovations that are occurring. And I would say, you know, though it does appear that there's a whole lot of, you know, white folk that are in the game in terms of entrepreneurs, I think that there's plenty of opportunity for minorities to get the same training and either start up or be a part of something big. And you look at increasingly the leaders of even the Fortune 1000, as well as startups, are populated by, you know, women, minorities, and folks who are more diverse. So I think that's changing. I'm not going to say it's there 100%, but I do think it's an opportunity.
What do you think, James, is going to be the biggest breakthrough in the next 10 years, technologically?
I think the biggest breakthrough is going to be artificial intelligence.
And
I think artificial intelligence is going to be downloaded into us to help us with our memories. It's going to help us be, we're all going to have artificial intelligence or a form of artificial intelligence called deep learning to help us better manage our jobs, whether that job is, you know, managing a robot or managing, you know, some kind of creation or project. Artificial intelligence is really at the early stages, and we're getting tremendous results. I think it's going to enhance our ability to have some of these breakthroughs in regenerative medicine and also to figure out complex problems such as how we're going to deal with climate change or create the next clean energy source.
That's going to be exciting. We're coming back with final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast next hour. We talk about misery. We talk about happiness. We talk about you with Ariella Ford on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our final segment with Dr. James Canton, the book Future Smart. Is there a bad ending, James, to any of this? Can something happen that just turns the planet upside down?
Oh, without a doubt. It's the dual use of technology. On one hand, you've got tremendous opportunities to, you know, build regenerative medicine, be able to fix the climate change, if you will, or address the changes, to be able to produce next generation of a billion new entrepreneurs and new businesses. Now, the other side of this, of course, is what we're seeing today. You know, we could end up with information wars. We could end up with climate change that happens very abruptly. You know, you could wake up in the morning and all of a sudden, you know, you could have parts of the planet that are underwater.
Yeah.
We don't really know. I mean, anything could happen. You could have an asteroid hit the planet, but it hasn't happened yet. So I believe, though, that we should be prepared for the challenges and that may be coming. And again, my book Future Smart is a way to be able to kind of suggest to you, look, extreme climate change is coming. There will be challenges. At the same time, educate yourself, become aware of the trends, and develop a capability, a mindset of, you know, what I call the innovator's mindset. You have to be ready to innovate, learning new skills, being aware of what's happening, kind of embracing, you know, emerging technologies that enable us, learning new skills, and enhancing your own personal development and occupation capabilities are the best ways to be able to get ready for this. You know, information awareness about what's coming and the possibilities are what make all of us smarter, future smart, if you will.
You worked at Apple. If you were there today, what would you be guiding them to do? What direction would you push them in?
Well, I would be pushing them into virtual reality, telepresence. I would be pushing them into creating a new generation of computers that help, for instance, us do more. Computers that have embedded artificial intelligence. I would push them into, you know, more cloud-based services. I would more go after producing maybe an Apple car or maybe an Apple spaceship or, you know, new kinds of extending the brand the way, you know, Richard Branson has done with Virgin. You know, Apple needs to expand beyond. You don't want to get stuck in just the computer. I think that Apple's done a great job in moving into the cell phone, of course, and moving into music. You know, the next things may be to help us, you know, with our health, to help us kind of diagnose our health and build out a world of consumer genomics that makes our homes more intelligent, makes our devices, can help us, the quantified self, may help us live a more healthier life, and maybe also instill the next generation of entrepreneurs. In many regards, Apple's doing that, but I think they could be going, you know, bolder, if you will. How about a flying car?
Does Apple have a Steve Jobs there anymore?
Not really, but, you know, it's a new era, and I think Cook, as a leader and the team there, very competent. The problem is Apple's become kind of a value company. Nothing wrong with that, but are they the radical innovator? They've lost a bit of that revolutionary sense. Back when I was at Apple and worked with Steve Jobs as well as the rest of the crew, you know, you felt you were on kind of a roller coaster of innovation, trying, experimenting, developing new things. And I think that the company has matured and maybe gotten a bit too comfortable on its success being, you know, the largest company in really the United States, if not the world, in terms of stock market value. So I think, you know, what happens to your greatest weakness is your greatest strength. Sometimes that is success.
Sometimes indeed. Let's go to John in Lafayette, Louisiana. Welcome to the program. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi there.
And God bless both of you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
I have come up with a particular device that will run forever. It produces all kind of energy. And the only question I got for the both of you is, can you put me in touch with Donald Trump?
I can get you close. I can't get you to him, but I can get you to some people that can get to him.
I've got the information to save the planet.
I would tell you what I need you to do first, John. And do you have email capability?
Yes.
Sorry. Send me an email at george@coasttocoastam.com with as much information as you want to load me up with. And let me study that first before I just go, you know, willy-nilly into my contacts there, if you would. But in a nutshell, what is this? What have you developed?
It's a perpetual motion machine, and it does work.
Okay.
A perpetual motion machine that produces mega amounts of electricity.
Is it free electricity?
Yes.
Oh, they're not going to want to hear from you. They need to make money on this stuff, right?
If they come out with this technology in the United States, they could sell it to other countries.
But definitely, email me. I'd love to see this. Innovation, James. There you go.
Yeah, no, I'd be interested in knowing more about it, too. You know, if you put together a website simply put, a couple of pages, and put the information up there, you'd be surprised. You get a lot of people interested in what you're doing, and I agree, a perpetual motion machine could end up being a real disruptive thing. So, you know, help change the world. Why not, right?
Go for it. Absolutely. John, thank you. Definitely email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. Load me up with all your material. I promise I will not come up with a perpetual motion machine with my partner, Dr. James Canton. We won't do that, will we, James?
No, we won't. That's right.
And we've got Annie back from Alabama. Let's see if we got a better connection for you, Annie. Go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Canton. I have hundreds of inventions, many high-tech and medical, and I have a way to help both the patent office and the inventor, whereas many of my inventions have been stolen because I did not have the money for a patent. And my suggestion is pass a new law to have the patent office award patents to the inventor, whether they have the money up front or not. And then if it sells, give the patent office a big chunk of it. I'd be willing to pay them three times over. Another thing is this low-dose human growth hormone in combination with stem cells can help repair the heart, and it's in several medical journals, and I don't know why they won't allow that to go ahead and be at least tried. And another thing we need is a way to check potassium and sodium at home.
All right, thanks, Annie. She's pretty brilliant people we have, James, that listen to this show, huh?
Yeah, I'm very impressed with the science and very impressed with your listeners. That's what we need more of, is folks that have an exchange of ideas. And, you know, I would sort of remind all our listeners that, you know, there is a large, there's something called Startup Grind and meetups. You know, every small and medium-sized city you can go online, there's all kinds of, you know, meetup and startup organizations that are designed to help folks that want to start their innovation company. And I just would encourage you to kind of dig in, and there's a lot of information online about the startup communities and even angel investors. You know, one of the things America does uniquely great is that we've created the entrepreneurs. You know, we founded the country based on entrepreneurs, and we're still going strong. So I'd encourage all your listeners to kind of get your skills up and maybe get involved with some of these startup groups, because you could learn a lot, and who knows, you might be able to find the funding or the management expertise or education or even information to help move your venture forward.
James, I'd love to be around in 2517, 500 years from now. What do you think this planet would be like?
Well, I think that that's a great question. I think that the planet will, I think there will be massive mega cities that will be both orbiting. I think people will live in cities that are orbiting the planet. I think we'll be off world.
Underwater?
Mars. I think we'll be underwater worlds. I think there'll be Mars communities. I think that will be hovering cities that will be in the Earth orbit. But I also think, quite frankly, that we'll be a world that will be made up of much more choices and affluence and prosperity, because technology will have liberated us from work that we don't want and given us creation opportunities of work that we do want. I think there'll be massive choices around healthcare, certainly climate mediation, new energy sources. I think it will be really, you know, boggling the mind to come back in 500 years. And quite frankly, a third of the planet won't be on the planet. They'll be on other planets, even Alpha Centauri. There'll be journeys to other places. I think we'll have fusion energy. I think we'll have space travel. I think we'll even have the ability to be able to manipulate time and space and time travel. I think we could be entering a world where quantum computers, things that really seem like they're beyond science fiction, become science reality.
Love it. Mark in Modesto, California. Hi, Mark. You are up. Go ahead.
Good morning, fellas.
Morning.
Thank you to you, George, and the Coast to Coast crew for the shows. We appreciate it out here.
Thank you. Appreciate that, too.
I have a question for the doctor about if he sees any breakthroughs on the horizon for the handling of radioactive contamination. I saw just tonight a story that they're cleaning up a plant in Florida, a fertilizer plant that had put a lot of radioactive water into an aquifer down there. And with Fukushima and stuff, I was just wondering if he sees anything on the horizon.
Good question, because something like that needs to be done, James, or this could be a disaster for us.
Well, as you know, the half-life of most radiological material, radioactive material, is upwards of 10 to 25,000 years. So this is still a vexing problem. I'd like to tell you we got it all figured out, and we don't. So this is, you know, this is the double-edged sword of all technologies. I will say that fusion reactors and thorium, which is a kind of non-polluting radiological substance, are what the future is. And particularly fusion, I want to say that there's something called the ITAR, and ITAR is the largest fusion production lab that is being produced right now to kind of have a breakthrough. You know, fusion is different than fission. Fission is what we know. It comes from, you know, the collision of atoms and the fission, the breaking up of them. You get a bomb, you also get a reaction for a nuclear reactor. But fusion is the future. We are going to be going to the stars with fusion. We're going to be heating our cities with fusion. We're going to be running our world with fusion. Fusion within the next 10 to 15 years will be the big deal. Now, I'd like to tell you that we've figured out the innovations to be able to contain radioactive material. We're still working on it. It's really a work in progress. Sequestration, carbon sequestration, putting it in the ground, being able to encase it with concrete, you know, things that we've been trying, quite frankly, it's a work in progress, but I'm confident we will lick this in the near future.
Let's take a few more calls. Joe in Long Island, New York now is with us. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, my one question, James, will be on the Internet of Things, people putting their cars, refrigerator, the dams on the Internet, and even on cell phones that could get stolen or hacked. And my second question would be on the drones. How are you going to know the drone is from Amazon? It's, to me, it's unidentified. You know the mailman. You don't know the drone, you know?
Yeah, good question. Let me hit the drones first. So get ready for, you know, drones delivering, you know, presents, your deliveries. Get ready for drones and other drones kind of invading your privacy and intruding. I mean, just get ready for them. They're going to be coming sooner rather than later, and there'll have to be some kind of regulation. So you're absolutely right. How do you know that the drone is delivering your stuff, and it's your stuff, and it's authenticated? So drones will have, it'll be a little like you're getting an email message. There'll be a validation or identifier that will validate that drone. Your other question around the Internet of Things, IoT, this is going to be a very big deal. Every product, from a book to clothing to, of course, a car or even, you know, furniture, will have an IP address or have an antenna that will be tied to the Internet and cloud. Now, it sounds spooky, but that's where we're headed. And part of that will be good for security. Part of that will be good for creating, just, again, as an entrepreneur, I can tell you, you know, there's going to be just hundreds of different kinds of new businesses from IoT and geointelligence, you know, things that are connected to other things. I have a trend in my book, Future Smart. I talk about the connected planet, and the Internet of Things is critical to that. We're at the early stages of building businesses and startups using using mobile technology and creating apps that will help enable IoT, not just Bluetooth, but other kinds of connectivity languages. I think this is a very exciting area. When you match IoT to artificial intelligence and mobile technology, well, I can think of a couple hundred new businesses we could start tomorrow for healthcare, financial services, and just the list goes on. So I think you're asking the right questions. These are fertile opportunities for entrepreneurs to be able to create new businesses.
Welcome back to Coast with more. Okay, our dear friend James in Austin, Texas with us. Hi, James.
Hi. I had a quick question about simulation theory. And so the 32nd version is that, you know, 50 years ago we were playing Pong and Pac-Man, and today we have augmented reality and virtual reality. And so if we assume that technology continues to advance at a similar rate, we could imagine that someday we'd be able to create a world in which Video games and reality are indistinguishable. And so the question arises, if we can create such a world, who's to say we're not already in one? And that's my question.
Well, there's a theory right now purported by many physicists that our reality is really constructed by our minds. And you know, it is far-fetched, but for all intents and purposes, some of the science about it, though it's theoretical, might be true. But I think where you're going with this, or where I would suggest you're going, if you haven't checked out Second Life, which is an immersive world, virtual reality, do that. Also, Sony has a new platform on virtual reality that's really kind of cool and fairly inexpensive. So I think where the future of this is going, and I try to address this, you know, in my book, Future Smart, I talk about immersive worlds for entertainment. In fact, I did a piece for the NBA on, you know, what's next for sports and the Super Bowl, where you're not just watching, but you're interacting. You know, you're on the field, you're in the game, you're downloaded, you know, into a player, and you're seeing the game through, you know, his eyes. So I think the notion of immersive, you know, virtual reality applied to sports. You know, we're training doctors with virtual reality technology right now, so they can go inside of complete an operation. We're training pilots like this. So this technology is just beginning right now. I think it's very exciting. And you might go to a trade show or even look online. There's a really interesting communities are popping up of makers, virtual reality designers and makers. And you might find it interesting to kind of know about all that. And who knows, there may be a business opportunity for you there as well to participate.
James, thank you for being on the program, and good luck with the book, Future Smart. Up next, we're going to talk about being happier.